Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to kick ass.
Governments play the same game. Banks and big business take the same blame. Open your brain. The Klan and the cops are the same. Slave quarters blocks and prison blocks are the same. They only separated by name, overrated by fame. What's in a name? A colonist is the same. People can't really see it because they blocked by the name. But really, Nazi Germany and your block is the same. Look, Wall Street and Main Street, really that's the same street. Drug talk, corporate talk, really that's the same speak. Boom back, boom bit, really that's the same. Beat, a throne or a chair in your home, that's the same seat. I wrote and recorded this album in the same week. California and Barcelona, it got the same heat. I walk the same street, put no trust in the game. Good cop, bad cop, they one in the same. Same shit. Rappers and politicians, they want the same thing. To kneel before they mask and kiss the same ring. But Solomon and Selassie, them are the same king. So from Rhodes to Mali, I spit the same swing. Ding, 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 there goes the bell. I'm the same as heaven, these dudes the same as hell. I'm the same as a plane that lifts off, fly. They the same as a ripoff, a lie. I remind you, don't let the criminal mind blind you. Instead, let the spiritual mind find you. See, I'm you. Just 20 years ahead, it's to your advantage. You hear KRS-One and rewind what he said. It's the same shit. It's the same shit. Look. Drug cartels is what sells the medical. Drug spots and drug stores are identical. Y'all need to wake up and join with the woke folk. Ignorance is only gonna keep you with them broke folk. KRS is on some cool shit. I ain't nothing to fool with. I teach more kids than the school gets. Game over, stupid. It's like we at the 8-ball corner pocket and I got the pool stick. You can say whatever, me, I'm living better and better. Getting cheddar out in Greece, getting the feta. Up in Catalonia, only eating paella. Up in Italy, getting bread, call it bruschetta. I spit, they cruise cars, I cruise ships. Democrat and Republican, that's the same shit. It's the same shit.
Yo.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome to the Howard Hughes Blog Talk Radio Show. It's me, your host, Roger. Today we're going to be discussing the policing of Black Americans. And I got my special guest on the show, Ella, you there, bro?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you're not, man.
Yeah.
What's going on, man?
Oh, man. Great. It's going great. I don't have any complaints at the moment. But
okay, cool.
Yes,
man,
sir.
Cool. I'm going to be talking about today the policing of Black Americans. And I'm going to dive in a few topics and I'll bring up a few names that are in situations and scenarios that we could pretty much everybody's familiar with. And we're going to, you know, start from the from this article that I found on. The article was written in May 29, 2018. It titles Why White People Keep Calling the Cops on Black Americans. It's for this website called Vox.com. And reading the article, man, it gave a scenario. It basically gave a scenario of this lady talked about this Black woman who was traveling in Milwaukee with her eldest son on this road trip. And she stopped to get gas, and basically she went inside, paid for the gas, and she got back on the road and realized that the attendant gave her the wrong change. Didn't give her the correct change back. So she turned around, went back to the station, back to the gas station to bring to the attention the person that they didn't give her the proper change back for what she paid for gas. And it kind of went into a little argument, so to speak, and she's the one to call the cops because, she probably felt like it was getting out of hand. So when the cops arrived, the cops, instead of them trying to, neutralize the situation, she explained in this article that the cops got in her face, and was telling her to shut her mouth, telling her to shut up. And basically, man, wow. At the end of the day, they end up arresting her and her son. You know, it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man, it just.
Wow.
It's it's like white people, you know, not being racist, not to that degree, but it seems like white Americans are weaponizing the police against blacks. So.
Yeah, it's nothing new. It's nothing new.
Yeah.
It's a continuation of the stuff that having the people like Emmett Till and others that, you know, innocent, but you got some people that have nothing else better to do. And the thing about it is the same implications of the possibility of what can happen when we have an interaction with the police is still quite possible today.
It's very clear, man. It just seemed like, you know, not seemed like, but it just based on situations and scenarios, like, you know, in reality, you know, white people, they have a tendency to turn minor, you know what I'm saying, situation that could be, you know, disputes into, you know what I'm saying, into anxiety, and they get the police to intervene on their behalf. And pretty much most
right.
cases end up being deadly, you know, deadly situation in most cases. And you think about just to name a few people, man, Terry Crutcher in Oklahoma. It's a guy that ran out of gas, you know, he called the cops for help, you know what I'm saying? He ended up, you know, getting shot by the white lady, you know. And pretty much
wow.
nothing happened. And look at Arthur Sterling. Arthur Sterling was in front of the gas station selling CDs like he normally do, you know, and somebody called the cops on him, you know what I'm saying? They came to, you know, to arrest him, you know, end up killing him. And then you look at Tamir Rice. Tamir Rice has been in a park playing with a gun, a pellet gun. You know, somebody called the cops on him because see a black male out with a gun, you know, and they get out of the car, shoot him, kill him, 12-year-old kid. And then you think about Eric Garner. You know, the guy out, he wasn't even selling cigarettes that day, he got killed, you know, choked out.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, call the cops and they automatically, you know, it's like you automatically guilty or something. You never know how the situation may turn out. Because look at Sandra Bland. She got pulled over by a cop. You know, she got arrested,
mm-hmm.
put in jail, and she ended up dead. So it's like, I mean, the police and the blacks in America has always been, you know what I'm saying, the issue dated back to when the police began. Because the police actually started out as slave chasers.
Right. Your patty rollers and. You know, those people, that was the origins. As I said, a lot of times we feel we've transcended, and a lot of people, it's very rare that we look into the origins of institutions and fraternal orders or organizations we want to be a part of. But yeah, if you look back at what the purpose of it was, it's always been to police black people, especially black men. It's always been that, you know, we were talking the other day about how if you ever notice, a lot of times cops intervene if there's too many black men congregated in one particular location.
That's true.
It's going to draw their attention. And so it's almost like this unsaid or unspoken rule that black men should not be assembling together. If we are, it's like, what are you up to?
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of, it's already bad enough that we have issues within the community amongst each other between gang members and people like that. But now you want to get together and just, you know, congregate or you know, just to be able to socialize. And there's a stigma that's attached to you that if y'all are together, something probably going down negative.
Right.
And so it's that unspoken rule that, you know, black males shouldn't be, if they're ever congregated, you know, there needs to be a white man present. And that's nothing new.
No, definitely not new. And, you know, the thing is, how do you handle, you know what I'm saying? Like, how do you as a black male, you know, pretty much handle yourself in situations like, I mean, even getting pulled off for a ticket, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't know how it's going to end up. You know, it's like, you know, the thing they
right.
tell you, you know, they tell you, okay, well, make sure you have your license out and, you know, don't, you know, you can do all that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like, at the end of the day, you never know the scenario or the situation you might be in because you don't never know who you're dealing with.
Right. There are some people who have attempted to put together some information on that. The bottom line is you can never be over prepared. One of the things that I noticed, and of course, you know, it's not black people in general that are doing it, but there's one guy who he puts a sign up on the window that says, "I do not speak to cops."
Wow.
So if a cop comes to his window, he has a copy of, you know, I guess any pertinent information that they would need. And to be honest with you, we should be approaching it from that standpoint. The problem is because of fear and because of the possibilities of what could happen, if we attempt to do something like that, many of us don't. But the bottom line is, we're not. Right. 9 out of 10, we're not going to do that. But the thing is, what has to happen is we have to get educated about the difference between rights and privileges. We need to have a dialogue, you know, with the police officers or peace officers prior to any interaction with them on the street. And that's something, I mean, I don't know, you may want to talk about that later on in the show, but
you can talk about it now, man. We can talk about it right now. Information.
But no, I just said, you know, well, basically, one of the things when you're studying rules of engagement, you're studying civilization and society and customs in their antiquity. Way back when, ancient times, feudal times, even prior to that, one of the things that you would notice when you came to a city is that the city would have the law on the wall of the city. So pretty much when you enter that city or when you're about to enter that city, you already know what the rules of engagement are. It's there. And so there was no mistaking if you got in there and you conducted yourself a certain way, counter to that, there are going to be repercussions.
Right.
So depend, you know, with varying degrees of severity. But the thing about us nowadays is, as we're out in the public, we have not written our law or put our law on our proverbial wall, so to speak. And what I mean by that is, there needs to be an understanding of what our rights are, and in a friendly way, but in a serious, non-threatening way, you know, we have to have some type of indication that we have interfaced with the departments that we deal with in the public prior to any interaction with them, in the case of like a traffic stop or anything else where a police officer or some, you know, somebody, such as a sheriff's deputy, could be called to a scene. So when they see us, they know, oh, okay. You see what I'm saying? You're setting up, I call it you're setting the terms and conditions. And so basically people are on notice. Like I said, it doesn't have to be in a belligerent way or in a combative way. But you basically let the public know in no uncertain terms, you know, you are, you know, first and foremost a human being, that you reserve all your rights as a human being. You don't waive these rights. At the same time, you know, you are respectful of the law and the rules as far as it depends upon you. You know, there's no ill intent. There's no ill will. And some people have done this and even went so far as to create a fee schedule, which basically means that if a cop stops me for more than 10 minutes, the city ends up incurring a $100 or $150 bill or a $500 fine.
Wow.
As a result of you stopping me for longer than that time period. And I have seen cases where it has worked. you know, a cop, you basically you're giving them a chance. You're giving them a chance to make the right decision. And in the case of where you're not violating the law, either they can write you a ticket or whatever they got to do and let you go. But they're not going to sit there and conduct an investigation, which is what they're doing anytime they hold you up for longer than a certain period of time. But long story short, and I'll let you get back to it, is just that we have to establish who we are, let the public know who we are prior to any interaction with cops, because the worst thing to do is to try and discuss the finer points of the law on the roadside with an officer who perhaps has had a bad night, and the last thing he needs is to be sunned by a black dude who knows the law. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. You don't want to teach the law on the roadside. You want to make that interaction as quickly as, you know, get it over with as quickly as possible. And you can deal with whatever in court or administratively after the fact.
Yeah.
But I'm doing that, and I'm going to teach people how to do that as well. I think, yeah, that's something that has to be done. Yeah, and it's like, but what it does, it's good, though. It's kind of like my parents would do that, you know, in school. And it's really the same principle. When before school started, my mother went out. She met the teacher. She met the principal. And so a lot of the abuses that I would see, and there was abuse, you know, in schools, the teachers, there was abuse in the classroom. But because they knew and they had a name and a face associated with my mother, they didn't treat me the same way. Because they knew, well, shoot, if we do him wrong, his mom already done showed up, had these kids, 70% of these kids' parents ain't even came here. So we're if anything happened, the worst case scenario, they're going to let my mother know. But as far as them putting their hands on me or feeling like, well, you ain't got nobody at home, we can do whatever we want to do, it didn't happen. Yeah. And so principally, we need to do the same thing now because it's getting serious. I mean, it's really getting serious. And you don't want to be running, like we just said, taking a chance you're going to interface with a cop and it's a possibility that you can get shot for no reason at all or go to jail, or even go to jail.
Yeah, definitely. Something stupid.
Yeah, over something silly.
Some stupid. So who do we have these dialogue with, though? You know what I'm saying? Other than ourselves, but like, you know, what type of law enforcement should we have had this with?
My father used to say, and I know you ain't heard it, I don't know if it's a Southern saying, but he said it all the time. He said, you prepare for war in times of peace.
Yeah.
Meaning, again, you want to put your law on your proverbial door of your city. So you want to let the public know who you are. And that could be done in the form of a certified or a notaried letter.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's better to do it in the form of, say, a trust or a group or a collective of people with signatures on there. And anytime you do things in that manner, the cops, the actual deputies or cops, the agents themselves may not understand it. But trust me, the people who are overseeing those departments recognize what's going on. And so, like I said, they're more likely to handle you differently on the roadside than they would somebody else, because the implications of what could happen to them, to their jobs, number one, if something goes wrong, is very serious. I mean, to the degree that, you know, you've had officers that have literally gotten their bonds removed, and they haven't been able to go out on the road anymore because of a violation of, basically, you could actually call it a peace treaty, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
But because they violated, you know, a person's rights, you know, the bonds that police officers have only cover certain things. And the police officer, I think I mentioned this in a conference call in the past, but a police officer is no different than any other person that's engaging in commerce in the public. The one rule that applies to everybody when interacting in public is that you have to have insurance in case any harm comes to anybody in the public. And the thing is, when you have a bond on you, basically the bond dictates your behavior. It doesn't cover everything. No different than medical insurance, no different than car insurance. There are certain things that you do that if you do, that you, if you violate, that bond is not going to cover it. And so in a similar vein with insurance as well, the more claims you have against that bond, the people who are covering you are no longer going to cover you. And if you cannot be covered with a bond, you can no longer be in the public doing your duty. So basically you had instances of where cops will get put on desk duty because you've had people who have been able to effectively remove that bond or put place a lien on that title until whatever the fine that it incurred was paid. And sometimes, you know, in the case of these officers, they don't have that much coverage as far as, you know, how much they're insured for in the public. So, you know, the city is gonna think twice about hiring somebody like that who have previous violations of that and look seriously into getting rid of people like that in their departments. And that's the way you have to handle it. It's administratively. I had a gentleman tell me in Athens that, you know, people were suing the city and were effectively making a headway with that type of that very scenario. And so what the city was doing was they were basically disassociating themselves from those officers because they couldn't afford to keep taking that loss. And so I actually had old white guy from Kentucky, man. He told me, he said, if you want to see change, he said, make the money move. When the money starts moving, all kinds of stuff changes. It ain't got nothing to do with a person liking you or not. You look at the Alabama bus strikes. It was about money, man. At the end of the day, they ain't care. They ain't like black people no better. And I don't expect no legislation to pass is going to make racists, white supremacists like black folk any better. But I do understand that they know they know about money. And the more you keep getting hit in your pocket every time you violate something, folks start straightening up.
Yeah, definitely.
So like I can say, I don't expect for the system to change, but hey.
Okay, definitely. So much question. So why do you think it's so effective as far as, like, you know, different like scenario situation where cops have been called on black people, like stupid stuff. Like the young lady at Yale, she was sleeping in the study room and she crossed the hall, white chick called the cops on her, you know, they had her removed. I mean, it's so, even if, you know, like, it's like they take their word over before they even investigate the situation, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I just had a very same scenario happen with a friend of mine over the weekend. I had to go pick him up. He was sitting in his car on his phone at a local mall. Security saw him, claimed he was trying people's cars, messing with people's doors. They sent someone out, sent a detective out, and they were about to arrest him because they said that he was out trying to break in people's cars. And it was simply his word. It wasn't, and the only thing that saved him was that he had the clarity of mind to say, look, if this guy is telling the truth, before you call the cops to arrest me, why don't you pull the cameras and look at what happened? Then all of a sudden, the truth comes out and the guy says, oh, no, it wasn't him. But it shook him up so bad because in the process, the cop ran his license. And his license was expired.
Wow.
And so fortunately, he was parked on private property, and he called me to come get him. But it's just like he said, you know, I could be in jail right now or worse because of the guy's attitudes, the detective. It was very nonchalant. And he said that was the only thing that saved him was the dude told the truth.
That's how they treat us, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, we a similar situation happened too, man. You probably, I was still on the news a few weeks ago, whatever. This, it was in Wisconsin. This lady, older white lady, she was driving. She had got turned aggressive and stopped at the gas station to get gas once again. And they drove off together, you know, and somebody had called the cops and said that they, there's a young black male was robbing this this older white lady that he had in the car, you know, and he's robbing her. And cops like, you know, you sure he robbing her? Yeah, I'm sure he's robbing her. So they pulled the lady over and they asked her no questions, made the little 13-year-old boy get out of the car. They made him get out of the car, made him go walk to the sidewalk, put his hands in the air, and walk backwards toward them. You know what I'm saying? Get on his knees, you know what I'm saying, put him in cuffs and put him in the car. So they went to the white lady, asked him, she's like, what are y'all doing? We got information that he was robbing you. She said, that's my grandson. You know, because he was mixed, but he looked black, and she was white. So
right.
They took somebody word that this young black man was robbing this white lady. So without even, you know what I'm saying, addressing the situation right on the spot, you know what I'm saying, going to the lady asking what's going on. They made the kid get out of the car, put him in cuffs, put him on the back seat.
Right.
Wow. All the cops, somebody called the cops and said that this young kid was robbing this white lady.
And so it just goes to show you that as much as people like to believe that in the 21st century the system has changed, it ain't changed. It's got a facelift. And the thing is, though, I've heard people say, the difference now, though, is that everybody got a camera. So
yep.
People can see it. So people can actually see what folks have been saying for years is happening to black people, and you can't deny it anymore.
Right.
But, yeah, on somebody's word. And that's interesting that that's all it took. And so,
yep.
Again, you remember the some of the laws back in the day, I think it said that, this one wasn't directly raised, that one of them was a black man had no rights that a white man was bound to respect. I think it was one of the things.
Yeah,
and pretty much,
yeah,
that's how it always has been, as far as, you know, white man's word is going to be considered the truth until proven otherwise. And even if proven otherwise, still nothing may come of it.
Yeah, because that's a situation could have turned out completely opposite what it did. You know what I'm saying? Like, what if the kid didn't want to get out of the car? You know what I'm saying? He was, you know what I'm saying, adamant about, you know what I'm saying, he ain't doing nothing wrong. You know what I'm saying? They could have been suing. We could have been beat up, even shot.
Khalif Browder,
yeah,
3 years in Rikers at
no,
16.
No conviction at 16
behind hearsay. Hearsay. Yeah. You look like somebody that we have been looking for. How often have we heard that?
Yep.
You fit the profile. You fit the description of somebody that just did this. They almost did it. The sad part about it, Roderick, that bothers me is that a lot of times it's certain polls and stuff that they take, and I'll be like, who they polling? I ain't never asked me this question. But when it comes to situations like this, it's sad the number of people I know personally, including myself, that have gotten caught up in these type of scenarios. They almost – my cousin came down. This kid was from Jersey, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tail. Ain't never been in the racist South there before, as you know, as an adult. He's a young adult. But the cops supposedly said that I believe it was a blimpy had been robbed, and he fit the description, and that would he just get in the car with them and let them take him back to the blimpy to see if the person could identify him, and he was about to do it. I told him under no uncertain terms, no. I went in, I called, you know, yeah, I had the soundness of mind to back away from the situation. I called my mother, I call his mother, my grandfather. Man, let me tell you, bro, my family showed up en masse. En masse. And my cousin's laughing it off because he's never experienced this before. But he doesn't realize the possibilities of how bad that whole thing could have went. Can you imagine? Yeah, he could have ended up dead in the back of the car. They could have been conducting an investigation that they needed a whipping boy for to tie up the loose end. You know, they could have did anything. They could have put planted drugs. You don't know. It's just that it could have went so wrong in so many different ways. But that's the status quo. That's the standard. That's not the exception. That's the rule.
Yeah, and it's a lot of brothers. It's been in bad situations. You know that. I mean, look at how if it weren't for DNA nowadays, man. You know what I'm saying? It wouldn't be a lot of brothers still be in prison. Like a lot of these brothers getting out of prison, man, been in that 20, 30 years for something they didn't even commit. You know, that was just
right
for being black.
Exactly.
Much,
somebody
you know,
to tie it on.
Yeah, it's pretty much when it boiled down, like we talking about Emmett Till. Like that lady said, he was a letter. And then she turned around years later, recently, and said that it was a lie. You know what I'm saying? So that woman can't get her child back. You know what I'm saying? And all because a white woman said it. You know what I'm saying? The police believed her. You know what I'm saying? And you know, and her white husband believed her. And they killed this kid. They got out with his murder all because a white woman said it was her word. So a lot of times, man, it's just crazy to me how these things happen, man, and it's stupid though. But this other article I read is from this place called the SocietyPages.org, and it's an article about police killing blacks, and it gives data from 2015, 2016, 17, and the first part of 2018, and it states that blacks are overrepresented among all those killed by police under all circumstances. I mean, you get killed for a ticket, you get killed for a tail light. Look at Philando Castile. You know what I'm saying? The dude said his tail light fell. You know, and
I heard that one. How many times?
Yeah, him being dead. You know what I'm saying? So it's like in 2015, the court blacks count for 25% of killed by cops. And then 2016, 24%. 2017, it's 23% of blacks, you know, killed by police. And you know, it's outrageous, man. It's deep, crazy numbers, and it was. The further too is talking about like 102 black individuals killed by cops in 2018 as of June of this year, 102 blacks have been killed by cops, and
wow.
Like 11% of them are unarmed, so no weapon. You know what I'm saying? Like,
wow.
But my thing with that is like
right.
The guy in Sacramento. You know, if you're a cop, you'd be around. If you've been a cop for a while. You know what a gun looks like. You've been around a gun every day. So how can you mistake
right.
a gun for? How can you mistake a cell phone for a gun? You know, and they put
right.
But you know, but like you taught me before, it's you know it's in their police bill of rights. You know what I'm saying? They can get away with a lot of stuff. You know what I'm saying? They can say I felt threatened. That's
mm-hmm.
all they gotta say. You know what I'm saying? They justify.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they justify murder. And. There's no justice. It's
mm-hmm.
a slap in the face when these people get killed, these unarmed people, and you know, some would go to trial
right.
to get acquitted. You know what I'm saying?
And it's kind of oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a situation of where, you know, it's justice after the fact. You know, it doesn't really matter to a mother how much money she can get after her son is gone. You know, our whole thing and having this discussion, though, I think that the direction that we're trying to take it in is how do we prevent it from happening to begin with? And a lot of it, again, it boils down to rules. And no matter, you know, how it seems, and I know especially for black people, it's hard for us to fathom that there can be justice. But these officers are beholden to a set of rules, a set of governing rules. And as tedious as it is, though, one of the things when you look at people who were protesters back in the 60s, guys like Dr. John H. Bracey and Amiri Baraka and people like that who were basically, you know, they were on the forefront of resistance as far as the violation of human rights. But what these guys did was, you know, when you think about time that we take to study box scores, or, you know, we understand what's going on in the sports world, or whatever the latest fashion or trend is, we got to take that same amount of discipline. And why aren't we studying a police manual? Why don't we know what they know? And as the notion is almost ridiculous, and it's sad that we should have to do that. But the reality of it is, one of the things that the maxims that I live by is know the terrain. Meaning, if you're going to be in the public, if you're going to embark on that endeavor of trying to go out here and interact publicly, meaning to go to your job, to your school, whatever, understand the rules and understand who and what and the nature of who or what you're dealing with. What rules are they beholden to? What are they studying? I want to know what a cop knows. I want to, you know, and this is the other side of it. Don't be afraid to interact with police. I interact with police every opportunity I get. What it does is a couple of things. It brings humanity back to the cop, because you're in a situation of where there is no conflict. You're interacting with them, and you're able to make these guys, even for a split second, come back to humanity. And that's what you're looking for when you're dealing with a police officer, because they have a persona, a public persona, which is the person that will shoot you if they feel the discretion to do so. But you also have, I don't care who it is, aside from the psychopaths, you got the psychopaths out there too. But besides those people, you have a cop that want to go home to his family and go home to his wife the same as you. And that's where that's what the come from has to be. So, like I said, interacting with police outside of getting stopped makes a difference. It will make a difference, because it's kind of like the scenario we often hear about, you know, a cop who stops somebody's kid and they know the family, and they end up taking the kid home versus, you know, taking the kid to jail. But that only happens because there's a relationship there prior. And so what I'm saying is, we have to be the ones to charm the beast out of the bear. You see what I'm saying? Public officials use the police department as their dogs, their proverbial guard dogs. We got to be the ones that bring that guard dog some food. So by the time the public officials look around, the guard dog is laying down, wagging his tail. That's the relationship we want to have with any type of police department or department where a person is carrying a gun, and their charge is to make sure that the public is safe.
Right.
That's the kind of relationship we have to disarm the situation, because we cannot go hand to hand, toe to toe with these people. It's not gonna. If anything, we're gonna lose more life.
So it has to happen.
That was it.
All right.
Hey, what's up, Fred?
Hey, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm here.
We talk about the policing of black Americans, man. We talk about different situations, scenarios that we touched on, like Terrence Crutcher, Arthur Sterling, Tamir Rice, Eric Garner. So we're talking about the statistics. You know, it talks about 2015. It talks about blacks, according to this article. It said blacks, according to account for 26% of the murders by cops in America. So we just talk about different situations, scenario where, you know, you can be pulled over by the cops, and, you know, and how do you respond? You know what I'm saying? Because it could end up bad for you. You know what I'm saying? Like Philando Castile. He got pulled over with a tail light, and he ended up being murdered. So, what have been your interaction with cops, and how do you feel about, you know, cops being?
I have you know, my own personal experiences from, you know, driving across the country and also raising a black male driver right now. That's another burden that I kind of bear too, because I find myself coaching him on some. I mean, it's almost the same dialogue that our ancestors and our elders had as many blacks, you know, traveled across the South or traveled across the country, you know, back in the Jim Crow era. I find, you know, it's shocking, it's alarming. I guess if I look at it one way, that here I am still coaching my child, just as I'm quite sure grandmama did to Uncle Billy, you know, when he left Duck Hill and went up to St. Louis to medical school and out to Atlanta for his first job. I'm quite sure she told him, you know, how to carry himself, how to not draw a whole lot of attention to himself, how to drive, how to, how to sound almost non-threatening. So, you know, again, from my own personal experiences to now being a father who's coaching a driver, a black male, in a community that is not predominantly black, you know, I'm telling him things to do just in case, you know, he gets stopped on the way home from a party, you know, and I've went as far. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, my turn.
Hello. Oh yeah. No. And I've went as far as taking his registration and the insurance card and putting it in the visor area so that he's not having to reach for that information, and if he does go for his wallet, you know, do that with the, you know, with the officer there and let him know that that is what I'm reaching for, which we know that too does not, you know, fully protect you, but you know, it's frustrating when I think about it, but some things don't change, but I do appreciate what the panelists said earlier, which is a strategy of basically humanizing ourselves and making sure that they see us as human beings and not, you know, a threat to them, because some of them do see us that way. And Lord forbid if my, you know, 5'12", 290-pound son gets out the car, steps up with his broad shoulders, you know, and if it's a little scrawny white cop, I guarantee you they're immediately going to feel a threat because of his size. You know, so I do appreciate, you know, the advice on trying to humanize ourselves by, you know, going up to them when you see them, shake their hand, introduce yourself, and again, try to just, you know, stay in their forefront as a human being, you know. But even in my business and my travel, guys, I have been profiled. I know for no other reason other than being black in a nice rental car, you know, doing business in a small town. You know, I was just outside of Little Rock going to see a customer. I had gotten my car from the airport and was on my way to a meeting. And stopped off at the local Dairy Queen, got me something to eat, pulled out, had my signal light on and everything. And, you know, I passed by, you know, a couple of white boys sitting across the street, and they pulled me over because they saw the plates on the car said Nevada. And so, you know, they, they said that there had been some problems with people, you know, I guess running drugs across that part of Arkansas. I'd never heard of that, you know, through that part of Arkansas. And they just, you know, and again, it had out of state tags on it. And, you know, I just kind of went with the flow, but didn't think about it until later on, you know, that man, them dudes just stopped me because I was a brother in a car with out of state plates on it. You know,
my philosophy, man, straight up, man, I'm just going to be straight up, man. Good cop, bad cop, you know, they all the same. You know what I'm saying? Like, they going to protect Like, okay, they go in, like that lady go in there and kill that guy in his apartment, you know? I'm
right.
pretty sure ain't no cop with her told she was wrong. You know what I'm saying? So they gonna protect that brotherhood. So right or wrong, they might not have been the one that would have did that injustice. But I mean, you never see cops speak out against other cops. You know what I'm saying, for doing stupid stuff like that. So to me, then you're just the same as all of them.
Well, it's a fraternal order, like we said.
Yeah.
So the thing about it is, it's like being in a family. We've seen the scenarios. If you know, you look at the famous legacies of gangster families in America. When one kid goes out and does something wrong, the other family knows it ain't right, but who ain't gonna stand with? So that's definitely a part of the equation. But you have had instances where I think maybe 4 years ago you had a whole panel of black cops that actually did speak up, and they were talking about the violations even that was happening to them within the police department because they were voices of dissent. And that's why I say you cannot change that system from within, because it is there for – it's not broken. It's there for a reason. The only thing that you can change about that system is – through our interactions and through our due diligence is hopefully to change the general perception of who we are, or at least of what they feel comfortable doing to us. We have to make it so that it is not cool, it is not a comfortable thing for a police officer or public official to kill or to do harm to us. There has to be strings attached. There has to be repercussions and consequences of a monetary nature to the degree where, you know, a person's livelihood is likely to be taken by doing certain things. And that is only going to be handled, it can only be handled administratively. And so what I mean by that is, even in situations of where perhaps it's an after the fact type of situation where your rights already have been violated, now it behooves you, it's incumbent upon you to get with other people in similar situations and circumstances and to work with these individuals to prosecute to the fullest extent. Like I said, there are certain rules and principles that are not necessarily directly, or I'm not saying directly, but it's not intra-departmental, meaning that there are rules that govern everybody that interact in the public, whether you're a police officer, whether you're a business person. If you have 1099s and you fall under, you know, that you are a corporation, which all of these people are. People keep calling this government. It's not government. These are all corporations, private corporations, and they're beholden to the same rules, the same laws is anybody else, any other person, any other business. And so you have to start approaching it like that. These are not some, you know, God-appointed overseers that are, you know, dispensing justice. No, these are pretty much high-level security officers that have the backing of one of the biggest corporations in the world, which is the United States government, whether it be there you go. But the bottom line, but think about it. But think about what you're saying, though. The Ku Klux Klan, why hasn't it been disbanded? Because it is considered a fraternal order. It is not considered a hate or terrorist group. And it predates a lot of the instances of their interactions with blacks. It predates that. So they're looked at like any other group. Now, mind you, if it was a fraternity, that you can lose, you know, your charter or whatever because of your conduct. But because the Klan is so well connected, you know, again, you know, nothing serious has happened. But at the same time, I'm telling you, as individuals, we have to be vigilant and we have to deal with – you can't let it slide. A lot of people say, well, you know, I'm wasting my time. No, you're not wasting your time.
but you're dealing with a but you're dealing with a mass of people with this that have no has no knowledge about, you know what I'm saying, to that degree. Everything is being, you notice anytime something
right.
happens or police kill somebody, it's always a, you know, they sue them in civil suits. So where did that money come from? That money don't come from their pension. That money don't come from their pocket. The city and the state or whatever insure these people. And anything
no, but
happens,
you have to sue them in their correct. But you have to sue them in their personal capacity. And that's what a lot of people don't do. Look at what happened to OJ. You know, they sued him for wrongful death after the fact. You know, it's
right.
you have to these people have to understand, and that's what I'm saying. The system is designed to eat itself. In other words, there's a certain amount of there is liability associated with every transaction that happens publicly, meaning that whatever is done, somebody is going to have to take care of the bill.
Right.
And no matter what their personal convictions are, no matter how they feel about black people, those rules that govern commerce govern everyone. The part that we have to get down, though, is how to be skilled in making it stick. And I'm not saying it's going to be a small endeavor, but at the end of the day, what are your rights and what are your freedoms worth? But for the people that came before us, it was worth their life. And I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but that's how serious we have to be.
Honestly, it's very few people are willing to risk their life for any kind for any kind of justice, injustice, you know what I'm saying, done to people.
So the question is, this question comes back to, what are you willing to do? What are you willing to do? Then that's it. I mean, whatever the answer to that question is, only you can answer that question. But
right. How
do you want it? In other words, it's a chess game. How do you want to handle it? Do
right.
you want to
before
deal with
masses,
it in the moment?
Before the masses.
Well, see, we're not talking
the
about the masses, though. The masses of black people will never do that. It will never.
Exactly.
If you think that black folk are going to come together as a collective and do this, you got nothing coming. It's not happening because the programming is too deep. The programming is too deep. No, black folk are not going to get together and go out in the street and march like they did during the time of civil rights. Black people know too much now. I'm a Buddhist. I'm a Shintoist. I'm Hindu. I believe I'm a Jew. We are diversified, and that's done. That's by design. It's divide and conquer. One black person to say, look, any one of us could go out and get shot because when a cop looks at us, he ain't going to ask us what we believe. He's looking at who we are. But for another black person to say, that ain't my fight. You can't even get on the same page as sports. Colin Kaepernick will bow for the pledge. Another black man said, I got a family to feed. So that's how short-sighted we are with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we gotta own our shit. And the only way it's going to change is that we got to be serious. You got to be just as deadly serious about this as white folk are, white extremists are about gun rights. You got to be just that serious because it's not a game. And if you think that by some stretch of the imagination, somebody like a Barack Obama or somebody like that is going to rescue us from this stuff, you got nothing coming. It's not happening. If we don't take charge of it, and that's why I said it happens, change happens in increments. It's not no overarching big thing that happens. And even more so because of the fact that, like you said, and like I said, I think we agree, black folk are not going to get on the same page and there's going to be this big bloody revolution that happens. Because, number one, we're not organized enough to do it, and we can't even read the damn police manual. So how are we going to, you know, people talk about what they're going to do. We're not willing to take that time and to put in that study time in the library as groups to understand the system that we're dealing with so that we can fight it from the inside out based on how it's set up. We're not educated to understand what we're dealing with. We see symptoms and we see signs, but we don't know the nature of it. like you said, most people don't understand the fact that the Ku Klux Klan and the Patty Rollers and all these people were the predecessors of the so-called police department.
Yes.
And the other side of it is that people believe that the police department is a government agency. It's not.
No,
it's a private corporation. And so, like I said, the rules that apply to GM, to IBM, to Apple, it applies to them as well. But we've been brainwashed and programmed that because these guys have guns, somehow it's different for them, and it's not. And so what you have to do is, again, I don't have a standing army. I have to use the tools at my disposal, and one of those tools is I need to be friendly with people within that system who don't like that system, who are willing to take a stand from the in, and work it from the inside. Those are the people. Everybody at that police department are not of singular mind. I'll put it like that. Now, if you say man down, hell yeah. You're going to see so many cops show up, it'll make your head spin. But as far as them collectively having the same ideology, the cops are just as varied as any other job you go on. And you have to exploit the fact that they are not all on the same page. And somebody in that department probably joined because they had a child that got shot or a relative that got hurt.
And then you have some.
But
then you also have some join just so they can kill people. So,
absolutely.
I mean,
it's psychopaths on there.
Yeah. But definitely.
Yeah, so our whole thing is in other words, it ain't no easy answer. One thing that's for sure though is that we have to be on the offensive and we have to be prepared in every way possible and because our lives are at stake. And it's that serious, so it's like you got to ask yourself what is going to be the best approach. And so, yeah, the answer may not always be the exact precise answer or definite answer, but I think that if you are able to quote what a cop is supposed to do, if even a pocket of us, a group of us, understood that there's an advocacy group in all of our communities that strictly dealt with interfacing with the police department. If nine people took it that seriously, that would change the way that cops interacted with us. That in and of itself, taking that level of responsibility, it would definitely change. Because like I said, as the saying goes, it's the squeaky wheel that gets the oil. It's the child whose parents come to the school who gets the special attention. You don't ever show up to school. You send your kids to school and you hope for the best. Your kid is the one that's going to get violated because I ain't never seen your face before. I don't know what you look like, and based on the fact that you send this child to school every day and we violate him every day, obviously you don't care or you're too busy with something else to take care of it. Somebody else's parent shows up. They say, look, here's my number. I'm concerned. Anything you need me to do to facilitate, the education of my child and in general, I'm going to do. That person, when psychologically, your synapse, your mental connection to that child is going to be that parent. The police department needs to have a psychological connection to the fact that this person says that they're a member of what organization, or this organization is representing them. Oh shoot, you know what? Let's just write him this ticket and be done with it. It has to be. If there are no consequences and repercussions, nothing changes. And that's why it doesn't happen to Asian people like that. It don't happen to people within the East Indian community like that. It don't happen to white folks. It don't happen to them like that because they know that if we violate, heads are going to roll. If New Orleans, we all say, if New Orleans had to happen up on the other side of town, it wouldn't have been the outcome that it was, because those city officials knew if they didn't get their shit together, that folks' jobs are going to be lost, folks going to jail. If that whole scene, you would have seen different phases of administration had it been on the other side of town. But why is that? Because those people have stakes in the town. They support it financially. They are present. So when it comes down to it, who am I going to deal with? If I'm dealing with the white folk, I already know I could lose my job behind it. It's all these negative things if I handle the situation wrong. But with black folks, where is the consequence? What are the consequences for killing a black person? The damn NAACP? Come on.
Prayer.
What are the consequences? We ain't talking about marching. We ain't talking about a show of force. We're talking about what can you do on paper? What can you do administratively? We ain't doing it. Exactly. Is it because we stupid? Is it because we don't go to college? It ain't none of that. It's because we don't understand the nature of what we're dealing with. And so, like I say, if we don't make that change, if we don't get involved on that level, we're going to be having the same conversation next year and the year after.
So the thing is, though, man, like, but okay, so solution-driven, like, where do we start? Like, so, like, right now we say, okay, we're going to decide to get a group of people together to understand how this law works and how to, you know, prevent, because like, white people have been weaponizing police, you know what I'm saying, just blacks for a while, and still will, you know what I'm saying, even, you know, you could be minding your business, you know, like the guy that's sitting up by the pool, the lady had to put him out, you know what I'm saying?
Right. It's going to happen, and that's what I say, it's going to happen as long as there are no repercussions, and as long as they know I can violate, that's like a bully, man. Like a buddy of mine always say, a bully don't like nobody that slap back. If every time they hit you, they expect you to fall on the ground and whine and complain, they gonna keep hitting you. But a bully, even if you ain't bigger than a bully, if you slap a bully back, he gonna think twice. Because that's not what they're used to. They're used to black folk complaining. But when it comes to us doing anything that actually puts a crack in the ceiling of the system, a crack in the wall of the system, it rarely happens. So it's like even something at just that simple, it's cognitive dissonance. It's a break in that narrative. And so basically, if nothing else, there's confusion because they're like, well, damn, black people ain't never did this before. Actually, come down here and talk to us and blah, that ain't never happened before. So even on the level of diplomacy, because it hasn't happened, you know, they continue to do the same thing. But if we do something different, like Obama said, I don't know if he said it, but I think it was a joke. Basically, he said, I keep on doing something and getting no results.
Yeah.
It was a skit. He said, well, maybe if I try doing nothing, something will happen. It's like you got to do something different.
Yeah.
If we see we're not getting results one way, we got to be like, okay, what else can we do? Because like I said, I'm for one, I don't want to go out and get shot by a cop. You know, and like I say, every opportunity I get to interface with a police officer and ask them questions that I have, I do it. And I have people that come to my shop that are cops, and I know them personally. You know, even in events that we do, I'm looking for an off-duty police officer that's security. I want somebody that already has a relationship with the force so I know the city ain't coming down here and I'm dealing with people that I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I think that far ahead that I'm like, you already a cop. We cool. We straight. I ain't got to worry about that. About nobody else from the department coming down here. So it's like we have to change our approach. And we can't be driven by fear. Because the bottom line is you could die of a heart attack tonight. You could walk out in the middle of the street and get hit by a car. You could get shot. Anything can happen. But can't be a place of fear. It has to be a calculated response. And that's where it starts. It starts with, let's get on the same page with the cops, okay? Let's understand what they know. Let's see what they know. Let's create a dialogue. Let's create and there are pockets of that happening in different places in the country. It's not reported on in the news, but you know, like I said, you have to count on the fact that there are voices of dissent within that office. Although it's not the rule, It's definitely the exception to the rule. There are people within the, within that office that are frustrated, but they don't see it clearly like we see it, that you can't change it from the inside out. You can't go in, you can't say I want to become a cop and now I'm going to change the department. It doesn't work that way.
No, the way it's set.
Yeah, the only thing that holds a corporation's feet to the fire are the rules that are designed to govern it, and it has to be something that's painful enough to affect change. And the only pain that there is in that particular capacity is the pain of a person losing his job because he can't be insured any longer to be in the public. He just can't go. It's like, it's not about I want him to go out there. They're not going to spend more money to insure that he goes out there. And then once that bond has been leaned on, you know, there's nothing you can do besides him going out and getting personal insurance. And how many men, when their wives find out that they can't go back out on the road because they did some stupid shit, how many of them going to keep doing that? You see what I'm saying? I signed up here to go to actually patrol and to go out to be in the squad car. I'm here doing paperwork. And not only that, when you place those liens, those private liens on those cops, you can report that to the credit bureau the same way they do us. They're a corporation. So again, you got to be creative and think outside the box and look at the sum total of what we're dealing with. You're dealing with money, you're dealing with corporations, but you're also dealing with human beings.
Yeah.
So there's a degree of psychology that needs to be understood on the mentality or mindset of a cop. And at the same time, at the end of the day, understand they're human. So the same rules that apply to me and you, they get happy, they get sad, they get frustrated. Use that to your advantage. They're not robots that's out here, and it's getting to that point too. The artificial intelligence is getting there. We'll probably one day you're going to have a cop that you can't reason with that stop you. And
RoboCop.
The implications behind that is even scarier. Exactly. That's even scarier. Somebody that does not have emotion and that can't reason, no matter if they wanted to or not, it's built into them.
Right.
That's why I say it's like we gotta rethink it, man. And I'm one, like I said before, man, you know, my rights are important to me. And I know who I am on top of all that. I am a human being, a sentient, living, breathing being. I'm not a citizen. I'm not any of these other things you want me to be. Now, if I need to play that role, I can.
But
first and foremost, my rights as a human being come first. And I do not waive those rights. And I do not stand under any other law. Those rights are reserved to myself, and I waive any benefit that you offer to me that will violate those rights. Same thing with the Bill of Rights in the states. The states said, we don't understand a goddamn thing on this Constitution, but we're going to create this Bill of Rights here. So whatever this shit is you wrote, that's fine, as long as it don't violate these rules right here. This is the annex. This is the addendum to all of this other nonsense. And that's how the states remain sovereign, because you can do whatever you want to do, but it cannot violate these rights right here. And if you do not have any rights, you are not bound to any rights that you don't reserve to yourself. And that has to be known, and you can put it on paper. Same way you got a driver's license, you can notarize it, you can witness it, you can record it, you can register it, the same way you can do a driver's license. So where it's on file, this is who I am, this is what I'm about, I don't mean no harm to the public, but hey, if A, B, C, V, G, F, F, G happens, this is the repercussion, because I take my rights seriously. And that's where we at with it. Like I said, there's some people, like I said, you don't hear about it. It's people that's doing it, though. I know people personally that's doing it. But, you know, it's about business.
Yeah. Conversation we need to have continuously.
Yeah, because I'm tired of hearing about it too, bro. I'm scared to drive. I'm scared to drive out in Gwinnett County at night.
you better not drive to Walden County.
Man, look, my wife will tell you, bro. I'm pulling somebody's driveway in a minute. Just like I lived in.
Yeah, please. It may not end well for you.
Hey.
Hey, man. Hey, thanks for being on the show, man. First one back.
I'm glad you're having it, though, Roderick. I appreciate that, man. I appreciate the fact you're addressing this stuff, bro. We need to.
Yeah. Keep this dialogue going. All right, man.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for the show, man, and I appreciate you being on.
My pleasure's mine, bro.
I'm out.